Peace, love, blessings, and honor. Welcome to the show. I'm your co-host, Eyes Red.
And I'm your co-host, Reality Soldier.
And we are
Garvey's Ghost in the Spectrum of Roots.
You know, we look a routine.
After the introduction, you know? Yeah.
So today it's super special.
Extra special.
Doubly super special.
Like, wonderfully special.
No, let's start.
Okay.
It's special.
Introduce.
Well, you use the introducing.
All right.
Do the introducing.
So today,
we're going to run out of superlative.
Today, we have a very special guest, the wonderful Asghala Selassie. Greetings, Asghala.
Blessings.
Be waiting.
Yes,
we've been waiting for this Omega energy to come and bless our podcast.
Yeah, I tell you, it's
so
been
necessary.
It is. And we're thrilled that you're here, really. No BS.
Yes.
And we have to be on our best behavior
We do.
We have to be gentle people.
Which of course is right.
Because we are always like that.
So first and foremost, how was your journey here today? Do you have a good journey?
You know what? I'm giving thanks for life. So every journey is a blessing. As long as we're there on the journey, we're glad. It was good. Everything is good.
Good. And family, everyone good? Everyone blessed?
My babies and my family, everyone is Irie.
That's beautiful.
So I cannot complain at all. If I did complain, Jah would smite me.
Yeah. I would.
Because nothing to complain about.
And Father, we appreciate your blessings.
Yes.
Thank you.
For real.
So we're going to go right from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's a bit that's come. It started to become known as where you're born,
mm-hmm.
where you come from, mm-hmm. how it got.
Mm-hmm.
So where were you born? How did it start? Let's have some background.
Okay. So I was born in London. And what to say about where I was born, where I come from? I come from London. I was born here.
Northeast,
my Caribbean, west. East London. So okay. Around these ends.
All right.
My mom is from Barbados, which not a lot of people know because she's got the rawest yard accent. and my dad is a Jamaican. I grew up with my mum predominantly. Like my mum and dad, they got divorced when I was quite young.
Okay.
So I don't really remember too much of my dad. I remember because actually we lived in London and we moved to Northampton. And that's the part I remember. I was probably about 4. So I remember like the family, you know, home. We were all together, like my mum, my dad, and my big sister and my big brother at the time. And it was just us three. So yeah, that is literally my upbringing. I would say we're born at London, and I've been moving about, to be honest. Like I haven't really stayed in London.
Okay. And what was dad's heritage?
My dad's Jamaican.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably why it rubbed off on mum and she had the accent.
Exactly. They met when like she was 15 or something, and he was like a couple years older than her. So yeah, that's why it rubbed off on her for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how many siblings do you have in total then?
Well, on my mum's side, there's 5 of us.
Okay.
My dad has 2 additional children.
Right.
And then my mum also has like about 100 adopted children, foster picnic, everybody calling my mum. So I'm just like sisters and brothers everywhere. Yeah. Like
family.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Big family.
So you had a very dynamic household then growing up.
Very dynamic, and everybody was always in and out because my dad used to be a sound man. His sound was called Jahu Sound. And so my mum will always tell me stories about when she was younger, like 16, picking up the record box there, but like all the sound men now, like she knew them when they were young, like Abashanti or Channel One, like they all kind of grew up together.
Okay.
So she knew them back in the day kind of thing.
So this was in London, Dad?
In London, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very dynamic household, very bubbly, always vibrant, always something going on. Okay. Party and everything all the time.
Yeah. Now I feel jealous.
No, I know they're ones, for real.
Yeah.
For real. And what about early school then? Would you do early schooling in London?
Yeah, in London.
Okay.
I went to school, my primary school was in Manor Park.
All right.
So, and so that, hence us moving around.
Mm.
It was called Cleves, my primary school. But you know what? I don't really remember that much about those years. I just remember like my household. I remember the vibes, but school, I suppose it was just school.
Okay.
Did you enjoy it?
It was happy times. Yeah, like happy times.
You strike me as a very happy kind of person. So I'm figuring that the whole school, the whole family environment, you're just a very contented child.
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so. Obviously, there was a lot. There were trials and tribulations in between, yeah, as everybody will face. But yeah, predominantly a really happy household. My mum done a good job of like trying to keep us happy and bubbly. And I mean, me and my siblings, just all day, every day. Somebody asked me recently, like, what if you was to look through the window of your childhood home, what would you see?
Wow.
And I was just thinking, I would see laughter. Like, all we done all day, every day, was just bust joke and just do stupidness. When I was a child, like, me and my sibling, just stupidness all day, every day, ramping and just doing madness. So, yeah, that's what I would see if I look through my window now, my childhood, you know, home. That's what I'd see. That's joy. Beautiful.
Did your siblings go to school with you? You went to the same school?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, there was 4 years between us. So, okay, like, my brother kind of, when I was, when I can remember starting, he was kind of going to leave soon. Right. Do you know what it was? So it was kind of like, not really spending that much time together, but we were kind of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All about friends, network at school. How was that?
Yeah, like.
Was you the leader of the pack?
I don't think so, you know.
I bet you was trouble.
Definitely. But I think when I was younger, I was a little bit more reserved. Well, maybe not reserved. Maybe that's not the best way to use. But I was less confident then, I'd say.
All right.
Yeah, so I was figuring it out. But my friends might have a different story. That's what I think anyway.
And what were the features of made of you in your primary school?
Outspoken.
Okay.
Yeah, I was outspoken. I always have been, which is like, I would say I'm not rude, but I would say my mind though, but in the most respectable way I could possibly say at that time. But if you're telling me something I don't agree with, I will let you know. I'll probably do it, maybe, but I'll let you know that this isn't necessarily something that I agree with or I like. And that was something that was instilled in me from my mum. Like, you have to stand up for who you are. You have to be a strong person, a strong woman. Yeah. You have to grow into a strong woman. You have to speak your mind. As long as you're being respectful, you have to make people know your perspective, basically. I don't think we fought that much because my sister was like, she's 11 years older than me, so she was too busy doing her thing.
Right.
And then my brother, my big brother, Marlon, he, I remember only having one fight with him, which was a little bit older on. Like, I can tell you stories. My mum told me that when I was younger, I used to beat up my big brother. And she said, you would just take anything where you find. Like, I had this little Hoover. I mean, take the Hoover and lick it with the Hoover. Oh, gosh. And then he used to run behind the chair and hide and cry. He wouldn't hit me back.
Yeah.
That's this story to my mum, but I don't remember that. Okay. Probably. Better that I don't.
In school then, did you have any, like in infants, juniors, did you have any inspirational teachers?
Yeah.
That you kind of looked up to? And
there was one teacher I remember actually quite clearly. Her name was Marva. At the school, please, we didn't call them by their last name. We called by the first name.
Oh, wow.
And Marva was like, I think she
That's a new way to start, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And she, I remember this school was like, there was a lot of like, there was quite a few like disabled children and stuff in the school. So they had like a sensory room and like a ball pond. I used to love it because when we got the opportunity to go in there, we was having so much fun. But Marva, she was like, she's a black woman, a strong black woman. And she always sticks out in my mind as somebody who would always just be a type of person that I want to go to. I want to go to her with anything that, you know, any problems or anything at all. I'd always be up underneath her anytime I had the chance. So, a strong black woman.
Okay, so let's move on a little bit to, like, secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find the transition? Because when I went to secondary school, it was like a big new world. Do you know what I mean? A bigger school, more people. How did you find that transition?
I loved it. Like, I'm a person who loves change. So for me, I loved secondary school. I chose to go to an all-girls school in hindsight. I don't know if it was the best idea. I was being a goody-goody. But I really enjoyed it. Just you know, again, like the first years of high school, I just remember just ramping with my friends, just always ramping. That's just all. I just suppose I'm just a playful person. So I just remember just ramping, having jokes with my friends and stuff like that. Even though I'm not really talking about schoolwork, obviously that was a part of it.
Right. Well, I was going to ask, what was your leanings? Were you sort of very academic? Were you maths-wise, creative, art? What was your
always
thing?
Creative. Like, I always, like, warmed more to the arts or, like, drama. Even, like, English is something that I kind of excelled at. Maths wasn't, like, my strength. I mean, I could do it, but it wasn't something that I enjoyed doing. So, yeah, always the arts.
So you read a lot as a younger child as well?
Yeah, I like to read. And then I think I like to write, like write stories, script, just write. I like to write from an early age. At that time, I wasn't a songwriter yet, but I just liked writing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what was the fashion vibes at this time? Because it's where we kind of learn about ourselves and
spill it.
Well, I haven't been Rastafari my whole life. So that was at the age of about 13, 14. That's when the transition started to happen for me. So I'll never forget, actually, when I just locked my hair. And the teachers were like, my friends kept on saying, because, okay, at the time I put my hair up and my hair was just like dislodged. So I was had my little locks and thing. And my friends were like, wrap your hair. Come to school, wrap your hair. And I was like, oh my God, I couldn't even do it at the time. So they was like, wrap your hair. And I was like, oh my gosh, all right. Like, I just gave in. I was like, all right, I'll wrap my hair and come to school. So this day, my mum wrapped it for me in the morning. And I went to school. And as soon as I got into school, they were like, take off your hat. And I was like, it's not a hat. Mm-hmm. And they were like, take off your hat. And I said, it's not a hat. It's a head wrap. I'm Rastafari and I wrap my hair. And this is, no, you need to take it off. And I was like, if it was a hijab, you wouldn't, again, this is the outspokenness.
Yes.
You wouldn't have told me to take it off. So they were like, take it off. No, not taking it off. All day, take off your hat. And it something joyful for me and my friends turned into like something really serious.
Right.
Born of contention. Yeah, exactly. I was like, what is going on? Like, you're a child, you don't think about these things, you know? So I was really upset, actually, from that. And I think the day kind of just escalated. And so I decided from that day, every day I went to school, my head was wrapped. From that day, I learned how to wrap my hair and I made sure every day my head was wrapped from that day. So yeah, so school was good, but also there's always like challenges. And when you're a black, strong person, like people are coming at you because they don't want you to be outspoken. They don't want you to speak your truth or your rights. They want to, you know, you're at school. You need to listen to the adults. You need to be listened to what you're told. But your household and mine is not the same. So I don't agree with everything you have to say.
And it's needless to say that back in those days, there wasn't that sort of cultural appreciation for people of color, ethnic groups. So it would have been something of a challenge to a teacher's authority to say, these are the rules, adhere to the rules, and if you're not compliant, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That exacerbated. So when you went home and told Mama about this now,
Mom, get begs.
My child.
You didn't know. Yeah, but I told my mum what my plan was from that day. Right. And she knows I'm a strong-willed person. I'm sure she probably did contact them. I can't remember. There's been a few instances where I can remember Mum, I don't know, something happened at school. Mum, coming down to the school, like, marching down there for the teacher them.
Yep.
I don't know if that, I don't think that was one of them instances, but there's been a few of them,
Because you led the charge on that one. You had decided, no, this is what I'm doing.
Exactly, yeah.
And did you think that, to me, it was a thing amongst friends. Like you said, it was kind of joyful, but then it became something that was central to it became central to a point where it's principle now. And this abiding sense of right and wrong that you had, it's like, no, I'll smile and joke aside. This is a serious thing now, and I'm going to stand 10 toes on this.
Yeah, this is who I am. This is my liberty. This is who I am. And as Rastafari, this was something that I came to myself. Like, my mum had locked her hair. Like, we haven't been Rastafari our whole life. Like I said, even my mum, she locked her hair when she was 40. So all them times my mum had short back and sides and like, do you know what I mean? It hasn't been, I wasn't born into Rastafari. Yeah. Right? It was something that my mum found the journey and then she didn't force us either. It was a choice for us to make for ourselves. So at first, like, I had my hair permed and I was like, I'm never locking my hair. You mad? I'm never. I look too good. Oh, no, my gosh. No. I was vain. And yeah, like before, that's why I'm so grateful for righteousness that made me humble because, oh God, before, nah. And yeah, so it was a choice that I made. So especially because I have made this choice for myself and now you're coming to tell me that this is something that you don't want in your school when it's my religion, if you want to put it under that umbrella. It's my liberty. This is my faith. You can't tell me not to do it. So yeah, I was just like, nah, we're not having none of that.
What was the defining moment for you then that made you choose Rastafari?
Honestly, the honest to God truth is that I had a vision. Jack came to me one night. One night, it was my turn because, and I'll never forget, I think I was about 13 and I was just being naughty and I'd just up and down, do whatever, you know, like just being defiant or just being a 13-year-old girl. And this day, I laid down and I don't know what I'd done wrong. I had done something wrong. So this day I decided that I was going to pray. And then I must have prayed and I laid down and I remember just closing my eyes and automatically the whole night. It wasn't just one vision. It was the whole night. Like, I saw myself in I don't really talk about this. I haven't spoken about this.
It's cathartic, years. Isn't it?
Yeah. So I saw myself, like, I couldn't see myself, but I was in a kitchen and there was a chair. It was a big kitchen and I could see a window in front of me. No, this is lying. This is before I went to sleep because I was praying. I was praying when this happened. And then I saw myself in the kitchen. And when I was praying about, like, my mum or my brothers or anything, the sun was shining through this window and I could see the sun like blazing through. And when I started praying about myself, it started to go red and black and like ugly and like it all the like red and black paint, like all like mixing together, like mixed together. And so I was testing it because then I was like, hold on a second, where's the sun gone? And so I would pray again about someone else and then the sun would shine and then I'll pray again about myself to see if the sun would stay. Okay. And every single time I prayed about myself,
right,
it just changed to an ugly, like, horrible, it was red and black and ugly. And I was just like, what? So after the prayer, I was just like, hold on, what's going on? Like, what is going on? I was so scared. I was scared. So I went into my mum's room and I was trying to wake her up, but this night she happened to have a toothache and she was like, my toothache. Like, she wasn't really paying attention to me. Like, I was on my own.
Right.
I was on my own. It's so like, my mum wasn't like, and for some reason, there were so many things that happened this night. I just felt like I needed to wipe myself like this. Like, I felt like something was coming off and I kept on changing my clothes because I didn't feel comfortable. And the last thing I ended up wearing was, what I actually got baptized in, it was like, it's an Ethiopian top, like a white one, and it has like the cross, the mascara down the front. I just put that on and I went in my mom's bed and I was trying to sleep and I closed my eyes and then I had a vision of like destruction. It was just destruction, like everyone running around, like there was like police car and like it was all smashed in windows and smoke and I'm only a kid, you know, like I'm a child at this point and like everything was just destruction basically. And then it was like I was hovering over and it went like over the water and into the nice part where everybody was calm and chilled and nice, you know, trees and everything. And I saw my mum and I saw my brothers and I said, where am I? Like, I wasn't there. I said, where am I? And then I hovered over back into the destruction and dashed someone in there. Lord Jesus! The next day, my hair was locked. My hair was locked.
Let's speak about the singing. Mm-hmm. When did the singing start?
Well, you know what? I wrote my first song when I left school, high school. And, you know, like people write on your shirt and they write in your book.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody wrote Always Reach for the Sky. And the first song I wrote was called Reach for the Sky. Wow. Reach for the sky, reach way up high. You follow your dreams if you reach for the sky. Yeah, that was my first song I ever wrote. So I was like 15 at that time. Yeah, and then I just started to get into the environment where like music was happening. Actually, I have to rewind a bit actually because I'm missing a part. When I was about 13, like around the time where I locked my hair, I met a sister-in called Virus, and she was from Akabu.
Virus.
Okay. Yeah, Virus.
Virus, that wicked name.
Yeah, her name was Virus, but she was in the Akabu band, or they call themselves Sister now.
Right.
And I just was at a taxi station with my mom, and she was like, yeah, are you a singer? And I was like, with my 13-year-old self, yes. Yes. So she was like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna give you some training. And I was like, okay. So she just invited me to her house and we would go and she would like help with my singing and we would write songs together and stuff like that. And I was only a child.
And that was just based off the energy she
picked up. You wasn't singing at the taxi stand at the time.
No, I was just there with my mum.
Okay.
I was just there. And, I used to live in Harrow at that time. So I used to take the train to Stonebridge and just go and link up with her. Like, at that age, she was the closest person to, like, a second mom to me. Like, she was just an amazing woman, beautiful singer, like, amazing. And, so she really, like, helped me hone in my skills.
Mm.
And then I used to go to Bridge Park a lot because my mum used to work there.
See.
And we was told that they were putting together a girl group. So I was a part of this girl group called, I can't remember what we were called now. It's gone, I can't remember what we were called. But there was four of us. And basically, the person who was our manager, he was a Rasta man called Nyanja, and this man, he's still in my life to this day. But it was because of him, like, he saw that I was, you know, coming into Rastafari, I was interested, I'd ask him questions and stuff like that. And so he kind of directed us to the church where we all got baptized and where we still go, Lion of Judah Ministries,
right.
St. Kilburn. So it was because of music why, like, my whole family kind of went in this direction because of the music. So, yeah, fast forward to after school, I would just, my mum used to have like a shop, as you know, and we sold all culture things. So everything green, gone or red, all carvings or African clothes or anything like that, we sold it. And we would like pack up the shop and go to different festivals. One of the first person who invited us to a festival was Finbar. So the first sound system I sung on was Rebel Lion.
Mm.
So I used to, you know, go up to Norwich and wait patiently for the man them to give me the mic. Finally, because as an empress, you need to fight for the mic. Like, they're not trying to share it.
Hey, mate.
They're not trying to share the mic because they think you're going to be rubbish or something. And I was still only about 16.
Right.
So once I get that mic and let off some fire, because by this time I'm vexed now because I've been waiting so long and so many tunes have gone past and I thought, oh, I could have mashed up that tune and it wouldn't share. So give thanks to Finbar and Rebel Lion. Like, for me, that's how it really started off. Like, them.
That wasn't Playfest, was it?
Playfest was one of them. Yeah, no, there was Strawberry Fair.
Okay,
we used to go to Strawberry Fair quite a lot. And then they just used to have their own dance.
Yeah.
And because we had the shop, and we were always selling things and stuff. My mum was always there and we were always had opportunities to sell stuff. So like I remember one time Horace Andy was on tour and we were there and you know, like selling stuff. So Red Bull Lion, they used to do loads and loads of big shows. I can't remember all the shows that they did, but I definitely remember the Horace Andy tour that they did. And we would be there selling our stuff. And I just would have the opportunity to sing because I'm there. Mm. So because of the culture shop, it really, our workshop, it was called.
Put you in the middle of the network. Mm. Yeah.
Right in the right place at the right time, all the time. So yeah, that's how it started for me. Rebel Lion, big up yourself, Rebel Lion, love all bad. Yeah, so yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So you had quite a few like interesting peers if you was around Horace Andy and certain people. You had some good inspiration there. What other, who else was inspiring you?
At that time, and even still now, Bob Marley's my biggest inspiration. Haile Selassie, the light of the Holy Trinity. Mm-hmm. He inspired me like immensely. And just listening to reggae music, growing up with it playing every day. Mm. My mom played music every single day.
Any female artists particularly that inspired you?
The female artist that definitely inspired me is Lauryn Hill.
She
inspired me so much. I used to listen to her songs all the time, learn all of her songs and just everything about her. And the fact that she was Rastafari when she transitioned, I was so happy. And for a young Rasta girl growing up, you had someone to like look up to that. Oh my gosh, she's an amazing artist. Her voice is absolutely amazing. She's an actress. Her style is just on point. Like she's beautiful. So Lauryn Hill's definitely one of my biggest inspirations.
So as a young black female artist coming up in them times, did you face any obstacles or any challenges?
Like
obviously,
she wouldn't.
Obviously, you said one of them was being a female.
You said being black, being female.
Yeah, exactly.
For real.
Yeah. Those are two.
Yeah.
I give thanks to my mom because she's been my manager for a long time and she's been like a very, like a protector for me. So because I started out quite young and I'm around all the man them, and then I'm a beautiful girl, woman, these men are trying to like move to me. So I'm like, my mom's like, that's when she realised, okay, I need to be with her all the time. So it was kind of by default that my mum became my manager because she couldn't leave me alone in certain environments because some men are vultures.
So I have to.
And that's the honest truth. And I'm really grateful that my mum was there by my side because she like protected me from any of those things, even any of them conversations. Some of them men are trying to move to me and say something, but I could look after myself, but with my mum there, I didn't even have to say anything. Or it didn't even get to that point.
Right.
Because, you know, I was protected. So that's something that a lot of females talk about in this industry. And a lot of females succumb to that. Do you know?
Because
like,
they don't have that layer of protection.
They don't have the
layer
of protection. Yeah. And also, like, they just think, okay, this producer, he really likes me. Mm. And I really want to work with him. So then she will sleep with him or whatever it is. And then him not even business bolt you again. The children not come out. You know, Ricard, nothing. So I just always say to Empresses, guys, you know, like, keep that rare commodity. Like, if that person wants that thing from you, the fact that you didn't give it is even more powerful than just, you know.
But your story and your point of view and your experience, that should almost be almost like mass produced or at least targeted to inform and guide other young potential. Mm-hmm. How many female artists have we not seen rise because of the same things that you're talking about, the Habashah business?
Yeah.
Because they just didn't, they had a bad experience and career done. Or they just lost self-belief.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of talent that we could have been exposed to.
You are 100% right.
So I think it's incumbent on you to make sure you do as much to pass on your experiences and let young female artists know that it's critical that you have somebody there to ward off the vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are so right. And I will definitely do that, you know.
Because
like having this conversation is just bringing things into the forefront that I'm been very blessed, very, very blessed that my mum was there this whole time and supported my music and just been my number one fan. So I'm really, really grateful for that.
Let's speak about your first release and how that manifested.
Okay.
Did you have a lot of experience in studios before your first release, or was it
I had a lot of good experiences, to be honest. I used to go to a studio in South London, and Colour Red took me there first of all, and it was Bird Studio, and rest in peace, Bird. He was such a nice man, and I just met a lot of people there, and I done some backing vocals there. The first time I ever done backing vocals was for Colour Red and the Right Vibe Band, Stephen Wright and the Right Vibe Band.
Marley.
Yes, and we toured the UK, and we were supporting the Wailers.
Nice.
And that was the first time I ever done backing vocals, honestly. And it was just me one, and I was so happy to be doing it. So happy to meet the Wailers, so happy to like be exposed to this. So, that was an amazing experience. And as a result of that, the Wailers called me to come and do backing vocals for them. There was a show that they had issues with the backing vocals, and they needed to get some English musicians. So, there was, Tan Tan, Drum Turn, me. Mm-hmm. And there was another sister in that. They were like, oh, they called my mum and were like, oh, the sister can't make it, the other backing vocalist, we don't know what we're going to do. My mum was like, easy, no man. She was like, she was like, my big daughter sing too. So literally, it was my mum's birthday. We went to Bilbao on my mum's birthday, me and my big sister, to sing with the Wailers. It was like so surreal. And it was an amazing experience. It was cool. Very cool.
Right.
But to be with fams, like, rest in peace, fam, because he's just recently passed away.
Yes.
And to just be in that environment is second to none. Mm. And then a few months later, they called me back to go on tour with them. Like, so my first European tour was with the Wailers. And I toured with them, and I learned, I absorbed, because them man don't rehearse, you know.
See?
No, sir. It's like, all right, this is the CD. So it was literally showtime. So I was learning, I was listening. I'm listening to Bob Marley tune over and over and over just to make sure I was getting it correct, because they don't rehearse. I just need to
make sure. Well, you can kind of understand that, because these are established. Yeah. It's like, do you need a rehearsal to go and sing a church hymn? No, it's a church hymn. They've been singing it for years.
You should know. Catch up. That's basically what it was. So that whole tour was just literally, I just absorbed so much from them, and just being in a tour environment to understand from the very beginning, this is tour life. You're like driving for 10 hours, you stop, you have to decide whether you're going to eat or sleep because it's sound checking a bit.
See.
And then, you know, you go sound check, you come back, eat or sleep again, and then showtime, you come back, you're gone again at 5 a.m. There's no breakfast, you don't have breakfast.
That's
like, you left before breakfast.
Yeah.
So like all of that was just like, wow, this is the realness of tour life. So that, from that, I like was young again. At that time, I was like 20, 21. So then from that, I literally thought, okay, what am I going to do with this money? Because I've got paid to do something that I would have done for free. So the engineer at the time, who was with the Wailers, he said that he wanted to record me. So I pick up myself. I went to Jamaica. I used the money to record my first song.
Nice.
And it was called Faith. And that was my first release.
Wicked. On your own label?
It was Carl Toppin, Big Neck Productions. He released it. So he, at the time, was an engineer for the Wailers.
Right.
So when I went to Jamaica, I got to meet a lot of people, like from the Roots Radics. Like, I was straight into an environment where I could meet a lot of artists, a lot of musicians, a lot of people have made a big impact in the music. So it was amazing, to be honest.
Surrounded by royalty.
Great
days. Royal queen amongst the royal household.
Just big blessings. So yeah, that was my first release. And I spent quite a lot of time going to Jamaica, like promoting the song, doing like promo videos and all of this. But at the time, like my now husband, he would always say, Scala, you need to make sure you're working, you have a job, to make sure you can fund all of these things.
Mm.
And before I met him, which was when I was about 18. I didn't even have a passport. I'd never traveled. I'd never been anywhere. And he was like, okay, you're going to get a passport. You're going to come to Jamaica. So I was like, okay. So I think about a couple of years in, we went to Jamaica for the first time. And he always used to say, just say somebody wants you to go on tour with them. Just say somebody says, come. I was like, no one wants me to go on tour with them. What are you talking about? Like he would say, you have to be ready just in case. And I'm like, no one, who's going to want me to go on tour with them? Literally. And I got my passport and I got it in December. And by the March, I was in Bilbao. So he was so right.
Yeah.
He was right. And I ended up going to Jamaica like quite a few times. I would work, save up my money. And then I done my first video, music video. I invested in myself.
Yes, yes.
Like, even though I had a lot of people around me who I knew or people in the industry or whatever, it wasn't just me waiting for somebody to do something for me. And I was still quite young. I would save up my money, I would work, and then save my money and go and do what I needed to do for my music.
That's that sense of independence, self-belief, self-motivation. Yeah. Also, just before, ladies, I'm going to listen to your husband.
Exactly. Find a good one, not talking sense, and listen to each other.
So after that now, so the next stage, all right, so you found, you're actually immersed in the whole industry now.
Deep.
Yeah.
So did you identify goals for yourself or how did it go? Were you just there, just enjoying and sucking up all the energy? What was it? What was the plan for you?
I did do, like, okay, in between the time that I done the show with the Wailers, and before they asked me to come back on tour with them in Europe, I'd done a few shows back in vocals for different artists, like for Errol Dunkley I'd done back in vocals for, and I think Everton Blender we'd done back in vocals for. So after I'd done back in vocals for the Wailers, I decided, okay, if you're not bigger than the Wailers, I'm not doing no more back in vocals, because basically, for females, what happens if you want to be an artist and you get too many people see you as a backing vocalist first, you get stuck.
That's
there.
What
you're known. They say, oh, yeah, you're the backing vocalist. Yeah. So I decided that, okay, I'm not going to do backing vocals anymore. I want to be an artist in my own right. And like I said, I'm going to use my resources and I'm going to make it happen for myself and try it.
Yeah.
Try. So that was my goal. Like, I want to be an artist. I want to, you know, put out my music. I want to, you know, my goal was to just do what I'm doing now, basically. Just, I don't want to be a backing vocalist anymore. I don't want to get caught up how a lot of female artists or females get caught.
But of course, as you know, being a backing vocalist is not, I mean, it's easy to categorize a backing vocalist as like not quite making it as a lead vocalist, when backing vocals is an art form in its own right, you know.
100%.
Finding the different harmony, the intervals and everything like that. So I've seen many times where there'll be backing vocals and they get the opportunity to go and sing a lead vocalist, sing a lead vocal with the principal artist. So we don't want to down the backing vocals.
No, definitely
but
not.
But for you, you always wanted to be a solo
artist. Yeah, I always wanted to be a solo
artist. But it's quite easy to get dragged along the current to
it
be
definitely
a backing
vocalist. And also, I feel like if it's, it depends on what your drive is. So if it's like you like the money, like it's quick money or whatever, you can just pay your bills or whatever it is, it depends on your situation, your circumstance, then, you know, it's good. It's a great teaching, but also so is sound system. Like, sound system is a different kind of teaching that as a solo artist, that foundation is like, again, second to none. Like, if you can ride any rhythm and jump on a rhythm and be in that environment, these things are really fundamental teachings for an artist. If you get the opportunity to do backing vocals, be in that environment, be on a big stage, and you know, like, there's so many stories I could tell you about, you know, things that happen on stage, but all of these things are important.
So far it's been so wonderful having this discussion with you, but let's talk about, have you got an album? Have you done an album? Have you, like, you know, you've spoke about being an independent artist and being self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
What, how's that going? Like, have you got an album? Have you done an album? What's the vision? What's the plan?
Yeah, so at the moment, I'm just putting out music.
Right.
But I have done an album. I've done an EP with, it was an Italian crew called Bizzari.
Okay.
And at that time, all I did was travel, like every weekend. I'd work in the week. I'll be in Italy on the weekend and I'll go back to work, mm-hmm. like half tired and all of that. So yeah, big up to Bizzari. And yeah, so that EP was called Put Jah First.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first EP, okay. 7 tracks. And then I got an album out that's called Warrior Empress.
Okay.
So that was released in 2016. Also, like, I have like some vinyl releases, like with King Shiloh, for example.
See, right.
Different things. But I'm the type of person, I don't really like to go to this studio, that studio, and this right. producer has songs for me, that producer has songs right. for me. I feel like I do like to control my music. I feel like I'm very free-spirited. I'm very, like, joyful and happy and laughing. But the one place when I laugh is with my music.
That's right.
The butter messed yeah. it up.
No, that's
there.
Good. That's
like,
good.
That's if you want to see the serious side of me.
Yeah. It's like one of your
yeah.
children.
Yeah, exactly. It's about babies now. You know what? No butter with it. Yeah, so, literally, yeah, it's not something I really like to do. So I'm saying that to say that Mad Professor did have a song of mine for like about 5 years
mm-hmm.
that he didn't release or didn't really do anything with. And we've just recently released that last year. It's called Survivor on the Warrior Child rhythm. So at the moment, I'm working with the Ariwa Posse
right.
and working with Joe Ariwa. So mm-hmm. I've had 2 releases last year with Joe. And one was called Rise and Shine and the other one was called Survivor. I mean, during the, like, for example, like during the pandemic time, I really spent a lot of time honing my craft and like okay. I've done some courses, like some vocal courses, like some music business courses.
Isn't
I really
something?
Took time to like I just had 2 babies at the same also.
Okay.
So I wasn't going to be doing music anyway. So throughout the COVID time that like, I was on lockdown with my picnic them. And the fact that COVID happened was a blessing for me.
You know what? We've heard that. It was a real impediment for a lot of people, but for a lot of people, it was a time for really some self
reflection.
Introspection very and learning so. And development. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes I think the lesson there is we get so caught up in our activities. It's like, stop.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assess. Let's mm-hmm. find out where we are. Where's our shortfalls? Where's our strength?
Mm-hmm.
And let's build and go better. So you did that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With 2 picnic.
And 3 of them I had two babies. I have 2 babies that are basically born in COVID.
Right.
So like me and my husband, like I said, we've been together for ages. We had like an 11-year-old and we were like, right, I think we should have another child because we're getting older now and we're having a lot of fun. So there's literally no reason why we wouldn't. So we had two more children, which is a big blessing. So alongside being an artist, I'm a mum, I'm a wife. So like, for example, like touring life, I have to make sure my house is clean, food cook and put in the fridge for that. Like for a woman doing this is very hard. And I don't think that we get the big ups. Like if you want me to, I just can't come to the studio in two minutes. No, I need to make sure.
I mean, you can't be on standby.
Yeah.
No, like guys, come on. Like I can be flexible, but you have to work with me as well. Like I have, it's more than one of me. I have to, each person is different. But for me, one of my biggest goals in life is to be a good mum, is to be a good wife, and is to have a happy home.
Of course.
Before everything else. So I have to make sure that's set up right. Mm. So I'm not the type of person who's, okay, my mum always said, listen, now, but I look good out on the road and your house dirty. Mm. You know, if you say, are you trying to come for some tea? And you come in, I can't invite you in because the house, that's not how I've been brought up. So, so it's very, very difficult to try and get everything in place. And I feel like that time through COVID, like you said, it was a lot of introspection. I was doing music all that time with one child. Now we have three
yeah.
and a husband. Like, it's a whole different, it's a whole different thing. I had to really learn. I had to learn how to be at this point right now, how to learn how to be a mum of three children, still find time for myself, find time to write. Right? What was that? Like, the first few couple of years, write where? Write what?
Shopping list.
Yeah, exactly. There was like...
I think as a guy, you know, we're not young, but over the years, we get to appreciate females' achievements with all the other stuff that comes with being a female. And we kind of take it for granted as men. We're just too busy going out there and shaping and changing the world and not realizing that when we got some pioneers of the female variety, they're coming with a lot of stuff, and it kind of makes the achievement even much more notable. Do you know what I mean? So your achievements in recent times, bearing in mind you got three, man, I got grandchildren. I'm hopeless after a few hours.
Tired.
I need to sleep.
Tired.
How you do that?
Yeah, that's why I definitely have to speak about this, because, like you said, I don't know if you've had many females on the podcast. I really have to like speak for my sisters, like this is not easy for us. Like, when you see us out here doing what we're doing, it's because we absolutely love it, and it takes a lot in order to get to that point. Like, when you had a sleepless night and now you have a studio session in the morning, and you have to cook, you have to get the kids to it's just so much to plan. Like, I remember, and that was just having one child, like when I went to South Africa, I went, it was only 10 days that I went for, and I'm grateful. That was like the best thing. Like, music took me to South Africa. And that was like one of the biggest blessings for
me. Tell us a little bit about South Africa. We might have a vested interest in your stories of South Africa. Pray tell.
Oh, God. Yeah, South Africa, oh my goodness, was one of the biggest blessings of my life, because the...
Where did you go?
I went to Cape Town.
Oh,
I had
really?
A show in Cape Town,
you say?
Yeah. Cape Town,
a windy
I say.
City in Africa.
Cape Town. Yeah. Everything they told you about Africa was a lie. Everything they told you. Listen, Africa have good water.
I know.
When you go to Jamaica, listen, you have pato. I mean, if they put this, if they put the carrot.
Well, they have some new road now.
Yeah, they have new road now. But how long I've been going to Jamaica? I mean, they pump pat home. All of that. No, every road was a good road. I remember we took like pens and like pencils and like books and everything for the school, because it's Africa.
Right.
We want to give back, you
know.
And when we went to the school, the primary school in the ghetto, this is me, a high school, this. They said, oh no, this is the primary school. Lord. It looked like a high school that would be, you know, in England.
Right.
I was like, hold on a second. Like, obviously the children don't have the money to buy all these things. They were so grateful for them. But the school looked good.
Right.
And I was just surprised, like, Woolworths. Was, I was just like, hold on, what's happening here? Like, it wasn't what they told us.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first things that I was really grateful to learn. Also, flying over Africa, oh my gosh, the vast land. It was just absolutely beautiful. And I thought to myself, you know, like, there's this bare desert, and then you just see one little, the couple little hut right there. So, and I said, you know how these people are messed up? You went to the huts in the middle of nowhere, where the people, them, of course, they're walking with no shoes on, because it's in the middle of nowhere. So it's like, I see what you lot have been doing, you know. Like, you've been fooling us to think that the whole of Africa is like this. No, it's like that in the middle of the desert or in certain places, but they failed to show us the beauty of Africa, the big tall buildings, the beautiful, you know, architecture, and the fact that all of the English people and enough white people are there in a big, big, beautiful house and a beautiful place. Like, they didn't show us that part, you know, they failed to show us. But landing, I've got Africa, oh my gosh, landing in Cape Town, I felt like the only way to explain it, like Avatar. I felt as soon as I touched that ground, something happened to me. Like, I felt instantly connected.
Wow.
Connected, and it's the biggest Rastafari community I have seen in my life.
Seen.
Yes, Askala. What a wonderful story we've had so far.
Oh, gosh.
Outside of music and family.
You know what? You need to have your own time, no matter who you are and what you do.
For real.
As you get older, as I've got older, again, like the whole lockdown or having, I don't really think it was lockdown for me. It was like having three children now made me realise that, all right, for my own sanity, I need me time. I need to have time for myself in order to do all the things that are required of me. And I feel like one of my biggest fears, like this is going deep for me now. One of my biggest fears is, you know, like I see a lot of women, they're a mum or they're a wife and they don't know who they are. Like they lost their self amongst every other title that they have. That's like my biggest fear. So I've learned how to like give myself time. Some small things, like I need to go for a walk. Usually I go for a walk in the morning, or I need to just start my day, like clear my meds, have a bit of time for myself. I like going to the spa. I started to schedule that spa day in, like, to make sure, okay, whatever you lot are doing, good for you. That's my household I'm talking to.
Yes.
I'm going to the spa. See. So, yeah, I go to the spa. I used to, like, think it was, like, a social event, but with my friends. But now I just go on my own. I just have
my own recentering.
So, like, a lot of time, a lot of introspection, a lot of, you know, reflection, a lot of time for myself. These, like, the type of hobbies I like to listen to, a lot of audio books. Okay. Again, I drown out my Pitney them. Put in my headphones and I listen to something. So yeah, I like to travel.
What kind of audio books? What kind of stuff piques your interest?
Like another thing that I'm interested in is like self-development or motivational kind of books. So I read a book, the last book I read, like for example, just this year I'm reading a book a month, and the last month's book was The 5 AM Club, it's called, which is an amazing book. I would advise you to listen if you don't want to read. And I'm reading it with one of my sisters, these books, and we're reading Becoming. Even though I've read that book before, it's Michelle Obama's book. That's the one we're reading this month. So yeah, I like to do that, learn from other people and just get insight from other people in terms of positivity and in terms of, like, you know,
reprogramming
myself as well, and looking at different perspectives and trying to improve myself. I want to be a better version of myself every day. All you need to do is be 1% better today than you was yesterday. Just one small little change.
I love the way you sort of make sure that you allow that time, because your dance card is full with all the stuff you got to do, but you make sure that time there for your personal space, because it's almost like this stitching time saves nine kind of thing, where if I have this 1 hour, the other 23 can be fantastic. Exactly. But if I can't have that 1 hour, it's a wrap.
Yeah. It's a wrap. So that is really important to me. I've learned. And I do try to pass this on to other empresses, other queens, other younger women, that don't wait this long, because no one told me this. Mm. I had to figure it out for myself. Like even my daughter, I'm like, okay, read this. Like this child is beyond her age, definitely. What other things? We have an event in Luton. This is my husband's hobby mainly. And I really also think it's good for you to support each other. Just as he supports me, I support his dreams and endeavours. So we have an event every other Friday, and it's called Rum Punch Fridays. Make sure you come to Rum Punch Fridays. And it's ton up. Like, it's ton up at the minute. I can't lie. Like, it's the hottest thing in Luton now.
Okay.
So it's really, really fun, hard work. Mm. Again, like it's fun, but hard work. Mm. Yeah, so there's a lot going on. I'd say that's, I suppose it started out as a hobby and now it's like work.
Right.
So it's fun though. It's really, really fun. And what other things I like to do? I love to swim. So I've just realised that these are all quite self things, aren't they? Yeah, like I do love swimming. I swim a lot. And I feel like it's, again, like just to try to get that moment for myself. So I love just to...
And keeping fit.
Yeah, swimming, yeah, keep definitely. Fit. But also I just love... I try to go on like adult days when there's hardly anyone there.
Right.
And just have my what I've learned in life is that your peace of mind is everything. Whatever you need to do to keep it,
yeah,
just make sure you do. Like, your peace of mind is everything. Without that, just you can't be productive.
What would you say one of your best qualities are?
I know. For me, I would say my confidence. I love the woman that I am. I love that I'm confident, smiley person. My smile, I like to, like, I don't want to leave the room the same as how I found it.
Oh, that ain't gonna happen. That ain't gonna happen.
No.
Yeah, so I feel like that's a good quality.
And the opposite side now, what would you say is a worse quality that when might annoy you?
I am tired, yeah? Stay away from me, because normally it's my mouth. I will say something that might hit you in the wrong place. And like the filters that normally are in my mind, right. Don't say it like that, Scarlett. Try and find a nicer way to say it. Just be blunt and bam, and stay away from me when I'm tired.
Looking back over the years now and reflecting, what advice would you give to your younger self as a artist and a young woman coming in Rastafari and this whole thing?
As an artist, I would just say, this business is ugly, but keep on going. Like, keep on pushing and believe in yourself. Invest in yourself, because no one's trying to help you. Basically, that's what I would say. I would say that to every young artist as well. Like, invest in yourself, learn, figure it out for yourself, know the business, because everyone's trying to look for someone to rob, basically. So just try your best to understand as much as you can. And as Rastafari, I'll just say, like I say in my song, put Jah first. Like, put Jah first. No one's perfect. You make mistakes, but just brush yourself off and keep on going and try again. Just brush yourself off, try again.
Because it's just all about positivity.
Yeah, no one's perfect. People be like trying to judge you, but take out the judge out of your eye first, before you try and come take out mine. You know, like, stop trying to act like you don't have faults. If my faults are more apparent and they happen to be out in the open, you could see them, then that's, you know, unfortunate for me. But you have yours. It might be in secret, but you have yours. So don't try to act like your dude or not stink.
Yeah. Have a shit jam it, Patty.
And then stop lying. Stop lying. Yeah. Just be real, man. Be yourself. Live life and, enjoy every moment of it. Live in the now. Like, there's so much I would say to my younger self, to be honest, or share with the younger generation. Like, live in the now. Don't worry about, the dream is there. It's there. But what you do now is going to get you there. So just focus on what you can control.
And like the good man said, have a job as well.
Yeah, have a job, have
so
a job.
So you can pay for your teams.
Yeah, because you're going to need to invest in yourself. You really are going to need to invest in yourself.
Ascala, it's been a real pleasure.
Wow.
And very enlightening.
Yeah.
And beautiful. And you can't see me. I smile.
My smile is infectious.
Yeah, all that we need, you know.
Take it.
It's been a real pleasure
having you.
Bless us with your presence. And we want to thank all the listeners and all the viewers for tuning in to this wonderful episode. Please remember to like, subscribe and share. This has been Garvey's Girls in the Spectrum of Roots. We give thanks.
Bless up.
Rastafari.
Blessings. Blessings. Thank you.